Welcome to the first podcast of The Secrets. I'm Michael A. Stackpole, a science fiction and fantasy writer, and I publish a bi-weekly newsletter called The Secrets, which is for writers. It's a very serious tool for writers. It helps writers figure out a lot of the things that professionals who've been in the game for a long time know. So if you're a beginning writer, this is going to be the sort of thing that will help you trim 3 to 5 years off of your development. If you're an established writer, a lot of diagnostics and ways you can find problems in your work. You can find The Secrets at www.stormwolf.com. And there are a couple of sample issues there, as well as information on how to subscribe. One of the things that I end up talking about in The Secrets, and runs through the first 20 or so issues, are things that I refer to as the rules of writing. These are the little things, again, that you learn in the beginning of your career, and they become very powerful tools throughout your career. These are the diagnostics that you can go to and figure out why work isn't particularly working at certain times. The very first of these rules, and all writers know this rule, and when asked what advice would they have for beginning authors, aside from saying, well, don't quit your day job or marry someone who's got health insurance, the rule that always gets cited is show, don't tell. This is very important, and it really separates beginning writers from more polished and publishable writers. What does show, don't tell mean? It's best for me to give you an example. When you're telling a story, you would end up saying, George was angry. People now know George is angry. When you show that George is angry, you say, color flushed George's face and his hands tightened down into fists. Why is the second method better? It involves the reader. The reader has to draw conclusions based on what he sees, on what he reads. So knowing that color flushes George's face, knowing his hands tightened down into fists, that's far more active and involves more the reader than just saying George was angry. Second thing which is important, especially in showing when you're dealing with characters, is that a lot of this material goes to characterization. It tells you something about the character and allows the reader to form a bond with that character, form an opinion of that character, whether they like that character or not. So if the comment that gets George angry was, oh, George, you're silly. Everybody knows vanilla ice cream is better than chocolate. We have one idea about George. He flies off the handle at being called silly, or he's really, really fairly serious about chocolate ice cream. In which case, you don't mess with George when it comes to going to Baskin-Robbins. If, on the other hand, the remark that prefaced the comment about his ice cream, or prefaced the comment about his becoming angry, was the man hit the child a third time and the child stayed down screaming, and then George's hands ball into fists, you understand the reaction that George is having to this particular violence. You also can predict what may happen in the rest of that story. Another important aspect of showing, not telling, is that it inspires the writer to use a little bit more verbiage to make the whole story a lot more colorful, and this allows you to actually hide a few things that will be useful later on. Let's say instead of angry, we make George a very nervous individual, so he's constantly fidgeting with things. And in the story, you note that George listened to her talk and pulled out his pocket knife, first pulling out the small blade, then the larger blade, then the little auger thing. At least that's what George thought it was, and he used that to clean his fingernails. Well, what have we done there? Not only have we established that George is rather nervous, we've established that George has a Swiss Army knife with him. And that, having that knife, may be important to George later on in the story. And yet, for the reader, he's already seen why the knife was pulled out. It's pulled out because George is nervous. So this becomes a good way to hide that sort of red herring. How can you tell if you're showing as opposed to telling? This is a fairly simple thing to do. If you remember back in the very first example, George was angry, you involved the verb to be in the description. So anytime you have an is or a was, when you're reading through and you have an is or a was, and you can eliminate it, this does a lot for you. Let's use another example. The car was red. Perfectly good sentence. You see this a lot in fiction. The car was red. But if you eliminate is, and you move red around, as you can do with adjectives, suddenly you have the red car. And now we need to complete the sentence. we need to add a whole bunch more stuff there to make it useful. The red car looked like it was going 90 miles an hour, even though it was parked. This gives you a very, very good idea about the red car. The red car had been battered so many times, you couldn't tell what was original paint or what was rust. Again, an entirely different look for the car. And so this becomes very, very important to help you make your writing richer, to help you go through and do a lot of different things with your writing. That's pretty much it for this first rule of writing. And even though it's a fairly brief description of it, this is probably the most important rule that you will ever learn. If you do nothing else and you make sure you show as opposed to tell, you're going to have evocative work that people are going to come back to. They'll actually feel something, they'll be engaged by it, and that's very, very good. Welcome back to segment two of The Secrets. In this segment, what I'd like to do in the future is to be able to address letters from listeners who have problems with a particular work of fiction or a particular thing that they're having to work around in their writing. You can send those questions to thesecrets@stormwolf.com. And again, that's www.stormwolf.com. And I will field those emails and I will attempt to answer them in future podcasts. Or if I answer them in an issue of The Secrets, I'll make sure that you get a copy of that particular issue. One of the big questions that writers get all the time from beginners is, where do you get your ideas? One of the answers that you often hear is from Schenectady, that there's a company that puts out a newsletter. And most writers think of this as a joke, and a lot of beginning writers immediately want the address. The fact is that you get ideas from everywhere. The analogy that I like to use when I'm teaching is this, that everything you do, everything you see, everything you hear, every experience you have adds a card to the deck. And when you go to write a story, you shuffle the deck, you deal out 5, 6, 7 cards, and you try and make the best hand or the best story you can out of those ideas. It's really one of the problems that beginning writers have, and one of the things that they'll ask about is, how do I know somebody's not going to rip my ideas off? The fact is that most people who write and most people who learn how to use ideas for a living have so many ideas. Their big problem is not stealing someone else's ideas. It's finding the time to handle the ideas themselves. A real simple exercise you can do to help you see how this whole thing works is just sit down and, whether at a website or take a newspaper or a magazine, and clip a bunch of different headlines, and then at random pick any two of them and find a way to make them work. Looking at the paper this morning, there were two headlines. One says, volunteer dog walkers fill a need at a shelter. Another one says, IRS looks for ways to tax newly wealthy. Do those two ideas have anything to do with each other? Not really. But could we make a story out of it? Sure. Let's say there's a volunteer dog walker who's walking a dog, and the dog is a German Shepherd. It sniffs something out in a set of bushes, turns out to be a satchel with a lot of money. And that's one possibility, and could get them in all sorts of trouble. A dog walker is out walking a dog for a shelter. Someone sees the dog and wants to buy the dog and is willing to pay the guy a lot of money. You know, what is the guy going to do? Is he going to take the money? Or is he going to be honest and say, no, go to the shelter and you can adopt this dog? And if he takes the money, what does he tell people back at the shelter? The dog ran off? All sorts of different things. You know, just little ideas that can pop out with a story right there. It's very simple stuff. And once you get used to thinking that way, you'll find plenty of ideas for stories. The other big way to get ideas for stories is to ask yourself the question, what if? And pretty much anything you can look at can be answered, can be dealt with as a what if question. If you're stuck sitting in traffic, you can ask, what if everybody in traffic right now in these big gas-guzzling cars had mopeds? Well, that would change the world rather significantly, wouldn't it? So anytime you have a what-if question, suddenly you've got a possibility of a story idea. And the more you ask those challenging what-if questions, the more you get challenging ideas. You know, what if it turned out that God doesn't exist? What if it turns out that God does exist and he comes back and he's not happy? story idea that I had once upon a time was, what if the God of the Old Testament takes a look at what his son has been doing with the family firm for the last 2,000 years, decides he doesn't like it, and does a hostile takeover? And in the process, kind of hits this giant reset button. So we have today's technology, and we have all the old gods coming back. So these what-if questions really do allow you to do all sorts of things. And that's really where you get your ideas. That's where you start. Because this is the first podcast for The Secrets, I do want to go over one question that a lot of you may have, and simply this. Why would a writer be doing this? Why would a writer be giving away secrets and helping other people get into the business he's in? Isn't he just breeding competition? Simple fact is, I don't really think anybody who's going to be listening to these broadcasts or podcasts and use them as the basis for getting started writing is going to be competition for me, at least not for the next 5 or 6 years. And frankly, if I don't get better in the next 5 to 6 years, I deserve to be overtaken and I deserve to be put out of a job. What I like about The Secrets, and one of the reasons I like teaching writing, is because so many people make this into a big mystical undertaking, and it really isn't. One of the things that I like to liken writing to is carpentry. You know, the first time you set out to make a set of shelves, they're not going to be very good. You're not going to measure right, you're going to tack things together, they're just, they probably will fall apart and won't be that sharp looking. But the fifth set will be. And the 11th set will be even better. And by set 14, you're putting in secret drawers, you're doing all sorts of cool stuff. Why? Because you've developed some skills, you've purchased all the right tools, you actually know what you're doing. And the sort of development that you're going to learn about in The Secrets is the kind of stuff that takes place in the first 3 years of your writing career. So I'd like to help you out. I'd like you to be there. And, you know, I'm more than happy to watch the competition come, because that'll push me to do more. And the harder I work, the better I'll get, and the better my stories will be, and the more fun that I'll have. So, I do hope you find The Secrets very useful. Again, you can go to www.stormwolf.com and find out how you can subscribe to The Secrets. That's also where you can send me mail to get your questions answered. Welcome back to the third segment of The Secrets. One of the things that I love about being an author is that I get to use words, and there are lots of words out there that get forgotten and really ought to be resurrected. One of these, which I got from the Word Museum by Jeffrey K. Kirk, is the word synanthropy, synanthropy. It is like lycanthropy, except in this case, it is the conceit that you're not turning into a wolf, you're turning into a dog. It's also used for a madness that people get when being bitten by dogs. It might also be rabies. But it's one of these ancient words that has, unfortunately, long been forgotten, and I think we should use it. And what a great idea for a story. You know, you have a lycanthrope who's running around in an area causing all sorts of troubles, and he runs into a synanthrope, who, in this case, happens to be a man who changes into a wolfhound. Boy, wouldn't that be cool. Think about using that word. Think about using that story idea. And think about other words that ought not to be lost to antiquity. If you have some of your own favorite words that you don't think should be lost, or you have ideas for subjects that you'd like to see covered just beyond general questions, be sure to go ahead and send me an email, and I will look at all of it, and probably won't get back to you because I'm really bad with email. But if I use your idea, I really appreciate it, and I'll make sure that you know that it's going to be used here on The Secrets Podcast. This podcast of The Secrets is copyright 2005, Michael A. Stackpole. More information about The Secrets can be found at www.stormwolf.com, where you can also download some free issues of The Secrets. Bantam Books certainly would appreciate it if I would let you know that you should be looking for A Secret Atlas, which is my latest novel, available wherever good books are sold. And I hope to see you back, and I hope this will help. Good luck with your writing.